I'm Melly.
I'm Chris.
And this is Beggar's Belief, home of scams, shams, hoaxes, pranks, and charlatans. Stories that are beyond belief because someone's lying.
That was so good. That was so good that time.
I kind of
practiced. By like episode 23, we will have it in the bucket.
Yes, yes. We are going to be doing something different today.
What's different?
Just.
Are you telling me the truth this time?
No. Just 30 minutes of yodeling practice.
Okay. Let me remember my Ricola commercials.
No, we're actually going to be doing a matchup of two or three small things that I couldn't flesh out into a full episode.
Okay.
So that's going to be today's jam.
You're going to microdose me on.
I am going to microdose. A confession to make. So you know how I had my friend like phonetically tell me all the French things in the last episode?
Yeah.
I did terrible.
We tried.
Notably though, the guy's name was Montan.
Montan.
Like the second syllable is supposed to dissolve away on your tongue. And I instead put all of the emphasis on the second syllable and called him Martine throughout the entire thing. I did it completely wrong. I sounded like I was standing on the back porch of a single wide with a Pall Mall on my lips. Martine!
Like, tomato, tomato, Martin, Martine. Same thing.
No, it kind of works.
For us, it works.
Yeah. Martine, what I've been telling you about falsifying your identity.
I'm sorry, Ma. I couldn't help it down there in the French countryside.
And you got your Bertrand Day mixed up in his.
If you would have named me Martin, this wouldn't have happened.
Your daddy raised you and your wife better than this.
That's my cousin.
No, actually not. That's where the yeah. So yeah, I need to apologize to the French 16th century peasants and my friend Batsy, who went out of his way to teach me pronunciations, and I failed him miserably. So.
Hey, but we gave it 110%. So that's all you can ask for.
Sure, that's 110%. I'm in trouble then. So like I said, today's gonna be. I haven't decided what we'll call these. Mismash, pick and mix, petite fours, appetizers.
Trail mix.
Yeah. It'll come up to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't decided yet.
So insert witty title here.
Yes. Insert witty titles. It's going to be our witty title episode. But I found a couple of fascinating ones that I either couldn't or didn't want to flesh out into a full episode. But I also did the legwork, so I'm not going to just let this fall by the wayside.
All right, because, fair enough.
Yeah. So for our first story, we're not going to do the put you in media res thing because these are only short. You have to understand, regularly in the world, someone decides to be fantastic and hide hidden treasures. And I love the fact that they do this. I geocache.
Yep. Yeah,
I love ARGs.
Yeah.
This is kind of predates all of that, but like that sort of thing, fascinating to me. Forest Fen treasure. I don't know if you've heard that.
I don't know if I...
Oh, it was fairly recent, made a lot of buzz that they found it. It was this guy dying from cancer, published a book that was full of poetry and riddles, and had a fairly sizable fortune, and it was founded recently.
It was real, and they actually found it. It wasn't just some lead.
Yeah, there's people who are saying that there was, like, some hinky stuff happening, but, like, that was the one that is within the past 5 years, and it made a lot of... got a lot of play.
Okay.
But one of the original books to launch this idea was called Masquerade. It was released in 1979. The author, Kit Williams, spent 2 years creating 16 intricate illustrations that hid puzzles and symbolism, while also telling the story of a rabbit named Jack Hare.
Okay.
Who is stealing a treasure from the moon and giving it to the sun. However, when he gets to the sun, he finds that he has dropped the treasure, and the reader is tasked with helping make sure he finds it through the use of the illustrations and the puzzles.
This sounds like the book I wanted as a child.
Yeah,
like I
pretty
should
much
have had this as a kid.
So this was in the UK. And the treasure in this case was an 18-karat golden jewel pendant shaped like a hare.
Okay.
It was put in a ceramic casket in order to keep it being found by metal detectors. The outside of the casket read, "I am the keeper of the jewel of the masquerade, which lies waiting safe inside me for you or eternity." So this whole thing, really popular. Like you said, I would have gone nuts for this. Yeah. Thousands of copies sold, not just in the UK. And people just started digging all over the damn place like based that on so basic hints and clues. Williams actually said that to make it fair for people who couldn't physically make it to the burial site, he was going to accept as the actual winner the first person who could mail in the correct solution.
I actually, especially for this being like, did you say the 70s? That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, for that to be the mindset of this in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I said, people were just kind of outgoing a little bit nuts and digging up random holes, like wrong term to Albuquerque kind of deal. You know?
I'm digging a divot.
So in 1982, Williams got a sketch that had a map of the correct location from a man named Ken Thomas. Williams said he was the winner and told him, go dig it up. Before Ken Thomas could, Williams got a second letter with the winning solution from two physics teachers. It seems these two physics teachers sent in the letter and then immediately went out to dig up the box, but missed the clay casket. So Ken Thomas, the first letter writer, came by, just sifted through the piles of dirt that they had dug up, found a casket, and took it.
I love that.
The fact that they announced that this had been found didn't stop people from going out and just searching and digging.
There could be a second casket.
Yeah, there might be a second casket. Maybe it wasn't real. Like, apparently it took a couple of years for this to sort of die down. So, jump forward 6 years. Sunday Times revealed that the winner of the masquerade treasure hunt had been a fraud. Ken Thomas was actually a fake name, and the man who had taken the golden hair was actually named Dugald Thompson, excuse me. So, how could he have found this buried treasure that could have been anywhere in the UK without knowing? Yeah. Dugald's business partner was the ex-girlfriend of Kit William. The girlfriend had been around when the hair was being buried and knew approximately where it was.
Oh my gosh.
Dugald and his associates went out and searched with metal detectors to no avail. In desperation to get the treasure, they drew a sketch of the rough area they knew it was and sent that into Kit Williams. Kit knew the area based on the sketch and said they solved the puzzle. The hair was eventually sold at Sotheby's London for £32,000 in 1988. And when it reappeared, it was briefly on display at the V&A Museum. There ended up being an Italian version of the masquerade and a bunch of copies that other people did of the same basic idea. The Golden Key, the Merlin Mystery, On the Trail, the Golden Owl of Treasure Toes, King of Kingdom, like same idea.
Yeah, a couple of those I've heard of.
Yeah, these puzzle books that had a treasure at them. But there was an American book named The Secret.
I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Not the as above, so below secret, but the other one.
Yes.
So it was published in 1982 and actually led to 12 treasure boxes. Each box could be traded in for a gem. Yeah. He similarly had clues to each hiding space and images and puzzles. In 1983, first box is found in Chicago. Well, there were ideas for the cities the rest were in, and in some cases, the boxes actually might have been destroyed just because of changing the city.
Yeah.
You know? Finally, one was found in 2004 in Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, and it just revived interest in this book. Unfortunately, the author had died in a car accident in 2005, so he couldn't give any additional hints or anything. Then came 2019. A guy calling himself Meteor posted to online forums saying that he was a treasure hunter from France who was throwing his hat into the ring. He said he had successes with other treasure puzzles and had posted articles about him and his past with finding treasure caches, and now he had some good ideas on where the secret caches might be. He said he was heading to San Francisco to follow up on a lead, and soon after posted that he had successfully found one of the chests. The San Francisco Park Department verified that someone had a dig permit and had actually dug on that day.
Okay.
So everyone online initially very excited that Meteor had found a chest after 15 years, and then they started having doubts. The chest he posted looked completely different from the others that had been previous found, and it didn't seem right. So the Parks Department gets involved with the whole scheme, contacted the sculptor who had made the chests that they knew had been used, and he verified Meteor's chest, not one of them.
Yeah, this is not mine.
Yeah. Meteor wasn't lying. He had dug up the chest. He had also buried that one.
Chest.
Yeah.
You know, chest intentions and all that.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised it took you that long to come up with a pun for this one.
Oh, no, I had that one rattling around. I had to wait for the right moment. I had to wait till I could dig it up.
So, ironically, not afterwards, long afterwards, a chest was actually uncovered in Boston, and a fill crew for Expedition Unknown was on site, which is probably why it pinged in your head. Yeah.
Yes, that's so funny.
And then I spent the rest of the day doing a deep dive of online forums and stuff that exists with people looking for what chests might still remain. What chest probably got destroyed because, like, they were doing construction on the site and accidentally dug it up. Yeah, it's a really fascinating read.
So, I just love the idea of someone, like, potentially accidentally stumbling upon one of these, having no context for what it is, and potentially, like, throwing it out. Or, yeah.
Well, that happened. happens to geocaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Regularly, people think that they're trash or something,
right?
Or that they're somehow something weird or satanic or evil. Yep. Like that pops up every now and then, and people are like, "No, it's just a geocache. People just want to sign their name and leave a little token."
Yeah. You know?
I leave teeny tiny unicorns and dragons.
Yeah, I think our thing was like rubber ducks for a little while.
Yeah, that's fair. That's, being somebody who loved ARGs, though.
Yeah.
That I would love an ARG in a physical medium. I love ARGs, but they're all online, so they're sort of a...
Hey, sponsors, potential sponsors, this is what you can do. I'm just putting it out there in the universe right now, because if we don't ask for it, we won't get it. So, beggar's belief, physical ARG, coming whenever someone makes it, because it's not me.
Next little tale. And this one, I don't know if I want to flesh out. This is an I don't know if I want to, because it actually kind of annoys me.
Okay. All right. Context.
And that's Wikipedia.
Okay.
A lot of teachers hate Wikipedia because the fact that knowledge can be edited by anyone, instead of the traditional way of doing things in which knowledge is only compiled by very wealthy white men.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. We hate that.
Yeah. The ones who go to really high-priced universities and their dads went to the same high-priced new universities. Yeah. So therefore, they decide what's knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. I stopped using Princetonpedia when Wikipedia became available. So
I love Wikipedia.
I adore it.
I use it as a jumping off site. Yeah, exactly. Though. Like, you know, you can go to their attributions at the bottom and you sort of go from there. It does rely on contributors acting in good faith.
Right. And it requires a certain amount of media literacy, mm-hmm. which is a thing in and of itself. But for me, I really enjoy that it is a collaborative community space.
Yeah.
Where you often also get these anecdotes from people that you'd never have the chance to hear if it was done by, again, research by like a sole individual with a lot of resources off in like a certain niche space. So yeah, there are ups and downs, but I adore Wikipedia.
The problem is it relies on human beings not being assholes.
Yeah, which is a big problem.
Yeah. There are a lot of hoaxes on Wikipedia. A lot of hoaxes. Like, they have a Wikipedia page on the hoaxes that are on Wikipedia.
I know what I'm doing after we record this episode.
And there's some on there that are interesting. There's some that are, how did they believe it? There's a lot of them that were caught very quickly. And then we have this one, which I just, if I don't do a full deep dive on Wikipedia hoaxes, this one, for whatever reason, caught my eye because at the time, it was the longest running hoax article on Wikipedia. So it was an entry written in 2005, and it's short enough that I'm just going to tell you it in its entirety.
Go for it.
In Australian Aboriginal mythology, Jar'ido Wenz is a god of earthly knowledge and physical might, created by Atjira to ensure that people did not get too arrogant or self-conceited. He is associated with victory and intelligence. No sources cited, no articles.
Someone just dropped this on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm.
Somehow it went unnoticed for 10 years. Finally, it was deleted on March 3rd, 2015, and at the longest running hoax on Wikipedia. They should have noticed. Jar'ido Wenz sounds like a minor Star Wars character, but actually is just Jared Owens with a different space. And it explains why the god's domain is just so self-congratulatory. So
yeah.
It's some asshole wrote himself as a god and was, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The only other contribution by this user was to write in a different Australian deity, your mom, which is a misspelling of your mom. But somehow that one was caught quickly.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Part of what makes this hoax noteworthy is it was translated into other editions of Wikipedia, including French, Polish, Russian, and Turkish, and it made it into a print book as well as part of a list of 500 minor deities.
That, see... Good this job.
Is, this is what, like I said, though, like, to
Jar'ido
me, though,
Wenz, you got into print.
Yeah. It was publicized a lot in mainstream media. It was used as basically a way to poke fun at Wikipedia and to cast a lot of doubt on it. Like I said, I get really frustrated with, there are spaces where I think hoaxes are funny.
Correct.
When you're messing with basically the source of information, I don't.
Right. And especially inserting yourself into a cultural area where you have no right to be.
Yes. Back off, Jared Owens.
Yeah. Go play in Star Wars land.
Exactly.
Do your spaces over there with George Lucas.
You know, ironically, if he had written himself in as a Star Wars character, they would have caught it way for sooner.
I mean, honestly, correct. Yeah, fair enough.
If there's one thing that the Star Wars people have, it's encyclopedic knowledge of every... The time that I'm not a Star Wars fan. Or I am, but like I'm not a Star Wars
fan. Yeah, fair. Yeah, same.
You know, in the fandom. And when I read that there was this massive article about the guy who is carrying the ice cream maker in the background as the Death Star is exploding, like that, the fact that they come up with, you know, that we basically know that guy's dietary restrictions. Right. Everyone who possibly is in the background of every scene has a name, has a backstory in the Star Wars universe.
So yeah, this is just a warning to our listeners. If you want to create a believable, long-lasting hoax on Wikipedia, don't touch Star Wars.
Don't touch
or
Star Wars.
Trek. Stay away from those two fandoms.
Yeah.
Then have at it.
Yeah. No, don't.
A little.
Don't. You know what? I'd rather you mess up a fictional story by adding a character than try to mess up someone's legitimate mythology.
Yeah. Don't play your mythologies. No.
Stay out of other people's religions.
There's a reason fanfiction.net exists, but also don't use those tags.
Fanfiction.net. Actual religion.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite tag on AO3, honestly.
Yes. We went through a whole thing at one point where we were on AO3 finding the most ridiculous list of tags. And I had one where this person had like listed like 50 different fandoms that their fiction was supposed to be. And one of them was Timon and Pumbaa's typing adventures.
That's about as niche as you can get.
Yeah. Yeah, that one won just because of how niche that specifically was. So, anyway, back on topic.
Yeah.
I figure mishmash the article once we can get a little more off.
Yeah.
This is how to poison a whale online correctly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I came across this one totally naturally. This is free range, organic finding stuff. I'm browsing the Baldur's Gate subreddit, the actual Baldur's Gate subreddit, not of the offshoots. And one day the whole page is just inundated with articles introducing a character named Glorbo in the latest update.
Oh, I know where Glorbo comes from because I came across this in several other spheres.
Yes.
I was very confused.
Yes. So the titles you're coming across for these posts. What do you guys think about the new companion Glorbo? Glorbo is the perfect addition to the BG3 romance mechanics. Glorbo is overpowered. Anyone else worried about Glorbo's racism? Glorbo genital reveal. Ask me any, or am I the asshole? Oh. My life wife is leading me because of Glorbo's romance scene, and finally, what the hell is Glorbo?
Yeah, this was a very interesting phenomena.
Yeah.
Sometimes things bring people together.
So, Glorbo did not originate in Baldur's Gate. He originated in World of Warcraft, or more specifically in the subreddit dedicated to World of Warcraft. Redditors had realized that sites were using bots to scrape Reddit posts and use AI to automatically create articles. Doing this, you can churn out a ton of zero-effort, zero-value content. It helps the search engine optimization and adds absolutely nothing to the world whatsoever. So they create this fake character. Glorbo added a bunch of information that would be obvious for humans, but not to bots, and waited for the articles to churn out.
Yep.
And when it did, it just proved that the website, the portal, was just using bots when it posted an article titled "World of Warcraft Players Excited for Glorbo's Introduction."
Yep.
When the details spread, they pulled all of their World of Warcraft articles off of the site because they had been shamed. So the use of Glorbo, now spreading to other games until such a time as it is immediately ousted, that eventually it's going to become a blacklisted term on AI, we know it.
But I mean, honestly, like, that is probably the biggest threat to AI growth at the time is global warming. It's a real thing, it's a real phenomenon, and if you don't catch it soon.
So you know the little reactions that I'm putting on the bottom when we do videos?
Oh yeah, I do these on purpose.
Yeah, I added one where like I'm getting an eye twitch just because of your pun.
Good.
I edited myself with an eye twitch just because of your puns.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, no problem. The same website as before, Portal, since posted an AI-generated article.
Oh my.
Scraped by a bot from Reddit about how sick gamers are about AI-generated articles scraped by a bot from Reddit.
What?
Yeah. It's like they don't even realize. The irony.
Irony. I cannot. And it's fascinating how this has just exploded, and especially the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All it took was a few people getting their hands on a couple of tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not an opponent of AI. I believe there are potentially very good use cases.
Oh, absolutely. Like, but there's times that it makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, like, There are efficient save timing things that AI can do for a base foundation to get you further along in the process so you can have more energy and resources to be the creative component. Don't let the AI create. Don't let the AI off the leash. Don't let it scrub. Don't let it, like...
Well, I mean, as you know my day job, I work in a very traditional handcraft. Yep. And people are like, well, you can't be replaced by AI. Well, yeah, I can. Because when people share pictures of stuff that's handcrafted and it is something that is either defies the laws of physics as we know it or is time-space restrictive that nobody could actually make it, it kind of diminutes the ability of what we as handcrafters can do.
That's actually interesting you bring that up, because something that I hadn't considered was like, yeah, how does that affect, you know, the more like traditional handcrafted arts and whatnot? But I have seen people using AI tools recently to generate realistic photographs of somebody like wearing what they imagine, what they want, to the point now that it's circulating.
Yeah.
And people are now asking, where's the artist who creates this, like, this leather craft or this, like, this dress, this fashion? And it's like...
Fiber arts, like crochet, knitting, they're getting hit bad with it. Because all of those, like, grandma with a giant crocheted kitten, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, I actually had on one of my recent posts online that went online, somebody was accusing us of using AI for something that I... took me 3 weeks to handcraft, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And see, that's where it gets especially kind of like threatening to those spaces is when people who don't have the inclination or the knowledge or support to distinguish what is AI and what is not just start going after everything or nothing at all.
Yeah.
Like there's no intent to do research and sort out. And it gets really difficult.
Yeah.
It also gets really difficult. I normally have to like look at fingers, look at fine details, things like that, lighting.
I love the jokes that it's like going back to the old fairies. Like, you know, count the teeth of the man you meet on the road, you know. as a lovable folktale, that's like just such a, you know, is something slightly wrong with them? Yeah, we've gone back to our roots.
We sure have.
So anyway, that's what we're going to do with probably every few episodes we're going to do one of these where it's a couple of little things. Just like I said, I don't want to waste my, waste my research. We'll come up with a clever name to call them.
I cannot wait for you to do more. Insert witty title here.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, these will be great.
Great, great. I love the inserted witty title episodes. The stupid thing, I'm researching and I'm like, oh, I wanted to do a modern identity theft because research, identity theft's coming up and like modern identity theft is just people taking credit cards from grandma.
Right.
You know, it's... Yeah. So I find this one where it's like, oh, this woman has assumed her daughter's identity, transferred to a different high school, and tried out for the cheerleading team. And I'm like, oh my God, that's great. Like, in the mid-90s, that would be a pitch for like...
That's a movie. That's like a teen movie.
Yeah,
that's,
or a primetime TV show special, you know?
Yeah, it's a Lifetime TV
exactly.
Special.
Insert the neighbor who like barges in regularly all the time and, you know, has a couple of laugh tracks and you're good. Yeah, no, she was like apparently a anxious wreck in the school and... In Texas, the judge was like, we're just not going to sentence you to anything. We're just going to send you to a lot of mental health.
Yeah.
In Texas.
Well, I'm okay. Well, mental health, good step. Location, not good.
Well, you know what? If they think you need mental health in Texas, you need mental health. Yeah. But yeah, like that, I couldn't have...
I'll take one mental health, please.
I couldn't have fleshed that one out.
No.
Article either. So, you know, it works.
But no, I'm excited for more of these.
Yeah. I need to give you a list of actually our like social media stuff for when you do sign-offs, I'm realizing.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that would also help too. Yeah.
We should probably do that.
Yeah. It's fine.
It's all good. You want to do a sign-off?
Yeah. Let's do a sign-off.
Okay. Yeah.
Because just remember, from this side of the microphone, don't believe everything you hear. This is Beggar's Belief.
Martine!